And without further ado, Brother Jim will come forward and give us his seventh study from the School of the Prophet classes. Brother Jim.
Well, thanks very much, Brother Ben, and good morning, brethren and sisters and young people. We've had a wonderful time over the last couple of days at the School of the Prophets, and this morning we're going to complete our series of studies on how to study and interpret Bible prophecy. And the aim of this particular study is to take us from the Old Testament scriptures that we've been considering, particularly in the book of Daniel, into the New Testament, but especially, of course, the book of Revelation. So you might want to join me in Revelation chapter 13. A little later on, we'll be dealing with Revelation chapter 13. And the other chapter that you can have perhaps a little piece of paper in is Daniel chapter 7, because we'll be using that as the foundation for our brief consideration of Revelation chapter 13. Now, over the course of the weekend, we have been encouraging the brethren and young men who have been present with us to come to grips with this particular chart, the Kingdom of Men chart. And I issued a challenge last evening before they left, that they might, over the next few weeks, consider this chart with the hope that they will be able to one day stand up and explain it to others. Now, it's not particularly difficult once you have the keys to it, but it is very, very important because it demonstrates that the very well-known passage in Daniel chapter 2 about Nebuchadnezzar's image is actually the foundations of the rest of Bible prophecy that thereafter comes, particularly in the Apocalypse. And so we've pointed out that Nebuchadnezzar's image, while it speaks of the unfolding of human history with the four world empires, that's not its primary purpose. Its primary purpose is that it speaks of the latter days. It's a revelation of what would happen in the latter days, which is why you have over on the right-hand side there Nebuchadnezzar's image. And we'll be doing just a little bit of that this morning. So then, the image, as we saw in our studies over the weekend, was first seen in Genesis chapter 14. And those that were not with us, of course, might like to talk to those who were to find out that the roots of Daniel chapter 2 were actually right back in Genesis chapter 14, as indeed the roots of most of the scripture is in the book of Genesis. We saw, as I said, this image was most importantly a prophecy of the latter days. And we're going to focus this morning in particular upon a couple of aspects of this chart which have been highlighted here. We're going to have a look briefly at what's called in the book of Revelation the beast of the sea and the beast of the earth. And we want to explore where their roots are. So the beast of the sea is actually about papal power, political power in the West gained by the papacy between the period 493 AD and 800 AD. It's that phase of the development of the Catholic system which was to ultimately produce the beast of the earth. And that's the second, the lamb-like creature that you can see. The beast of the earth is papal power, not based in Rome, but papal power based in Rome and in Central Europe. And so we're going to have a look at what's called in history the Holy Roman Empire, which began in 800 AD. And we're going to see how important that is for ourselves today, because the whole point of the European Union was to rebuild the Holy Roman Empire. And of course, they've been trying to do this for some time. The original Holy Roman Empire came to an end through the work of Napoleon in 1806. And since then, there have been several attempts to rebuild it. There was the attempt by Bismarck in Germany in 1870 for the Second Reich, Reich being a kingdom. Then, of course, there was the attempt by Hitler in the 1930s and 40s to rebuild the Holy Roman Empire. He said that his empire would last 1,000 years, and he was basing that upon the fact that the first one had lasted for 1,000 years. Well, of course, he wasn't successful. He lasted for 6 or 7 years. And then, of course, the European Union, which was initially formed in 1956-57, that was designed to rebuild the Holy Roman Empire. And, of course, they won't succeed before Armageddon, but they will succeed after Armageddon. And we're going to have a brief look at the phases of history that have gone before, which are the pattern upon which the future will be built. So this chart is going to help us in that regard. Now, you see that creature over there on the right-hand side, the sort of like crocodile-looking creature that has 10 horns on his head, and three of these horns are plucked up by the roots, and they're replaced by another little horn. Well, that little horn actually represents the Holy Roman Empire that in the book of Revelation, Revelation 13, verses 11 to 18, is described as a lamb-like creature with a lion-like mouth, and it's got two horns. So we're going to have a look at how that came to pass. So what I'd like you to do with me is to come back now to the roots, because you see, the beast of the sea was primarily the centre of papal power in Rome, which of course is the Mediterranean region. That's why he's called the beast of the sea. But the beast of the earth was centred in Europe. So it's called the beast of the earth. And of course, we have two chapters in the book of Daniel that deal with both of these beasts. It's very important to remember that we have two little horns in the book of Daniel, and they are diverse. They don't speak of the same thing. Speak of the Roman Empire, but in different areas and phases. So come back to Daniel with me, if you wouldn't mind, as the basis of our consideration briefly of Revelation 13. I'm going to come back to Daniel chapter 7. Now, some of you, of course, will have some notes in your Bible about this, and none of this is going to be new to those that have been around for a while. But Daniel chapter 7 and verse 8 brings us to this first little horn. Now, we've just considered verse 7, and verse 7 has to do with the fourth empire, the Roman Empire, and verse 7 ended with the phrase that this beast had 10 horns. Those 10 horns, of course, were the formation of 10 separate kingdoms on the Roman territory through barbarian invasions in the 4th and 5th centuries after Christ. Okay, so when you read verse 8, you read this: I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were three of the first horns plucked up by the roots, and behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Now, this is a reference to the Holy Roman Empire. So Daniel chapter 7 is about Catholicism and its political power in the West. When you turn the page of your Bible to Daniel chapter 8 and verse 9, you read this: And out of one of them, that is one of the four divisions of Alexander's empire, namely the kingdom of Pergamum, out of one of them came forth a little horn. Now, this little horn is not to be confused with the one in chapter 7 and verse 8. Because what we have here, of course, is the growth of the Roman Empire in the East, ultimately based in Constantinople. So when you read the book of Daniel, you must separate these two horns. Chapter 7 deals with the Roman Empire in the West, and chapter 8 deals with the Roman Empire in the East. And we want to have a look in particular at the one in the West. So we read verse 8 of Daniel chapter 7, and we saw certain elements that clearly point to the Catholic system. For example, this little horn has eyes like a man. Now, of course, you remember that the papacy is known as the Holy See. S-double-E, you know, eyes, Holy See. Because, of course, they have priests everywhere, and they know exactly what's going on. All right, and they report back to Rome. So it's the Holy See. And you'll also know that the papacy is known for its encyclicals. Now, it's not a common word that we use, but an encyclical is like an epistle. And it's supposedly that when the Pope speaks ex cathedra, he's infallible. That's what they say. So he's got a mouth that speaks great things. So there's this element of the papal system there in the very nature of this horn. So what about the history of this? Why were these three horns plucked up that this little horn might grow up in its place? Let's have a look at that history. The papacy, based in Rome, was supported for centuries by the emperors in the capital of the Roman Empire in the East, Constantinople. But there came a time when they fell out in the 7th century AD over idolatry. The emperors in the east said, we're going to get rid of our idols, I want you to get rid of yours. And the Pope said, go jump in the lake. And they said, okay, you can row your own canoe. All right, so the eastern emperors said, that's enough, we're not going to support you anymore. If you're not going to follow our lead, then you're on your own. So the Pope found himself in Italy. He had around him three Lombard kingdoms. Now, these were some of the kingdoms that had been formed by the barbarians, and they controlled the bulk of Italy. And so they said, well, hang on, the eastern emperors are not going to support him anymore, so why don't we sort of give him a bit of trouble? So for decades, they made the Pope's life unbearable. And in the end, he had to look for help. And he looked for help to a little king in France. He was called Pepin the Short. Okay, he looked for help from Pepin the Short, the king of France, to support him against these Lombard kingdoms. And this is what happened. All right, he was troubled by the Lombards. He called on Pepin, king of France. Pepin gave ultimately, he came down between 753 and 758. He defeated these Lombard kingdoms and he gave them to the Pope. He said, okay, you can take over this territory. So what does the Pope do? Well, immediately he creates the Triple Tiara Crown. Now, this happens to be Pope Pius XII, Hitler's Pope, by the way. He's wearing, this is in the 1940s, okay, he's wearing that Triple Tiara Crown. Now, Triple Tiara, of course, because there are three horns. See, it's sort of like in a horn shape. Three horns are plucked up and given to him, and he then, his system grows up as the Holy Roman Empire. Okay, you get a bit of a picture of how that unfolded in history. Now, here are the Lombard kingdoms, 1, 2, 3, that you can see on this map here of Italy. You can see that the Pope is sort of surrounded by these kingdoms. They are plucked up by Pepin, 753 to 758 AD, and we end up with what was called the Papal States. Right? He takes control of these states. They're called the Papal States. So this power begins to grow. But that wasn't the actual emergence of the Holy Roman Empire. This is in 758 AD. The Holy Roman Empire doesn't come into existence until 800 AD, and specifically on Christmas Day, 800 AD. Because on that day, Pope Leo III crowned Charlemagne, who was the son of Pepin, king of France, who had been ruling, by the way, in the wake of his father, and he killed his brother, who was also a co-ruler, but he killed his brother and became the sole ruler of France in 785 AD. And he'd been on the throne for 15 years before he was actually made the emperor of the Holy Roman Empire in 800 AD. And he became the protector of the church. So here we are in Rome, Pope Leo crowning Charlemagne. And that, of course, brought about the kingdom, or the empire of Charlemagne, the Carolingian kingdom, as they call it. And his reign was from 800 AD to 814 when he died. Now, it's very significant, of course, that the European Union, when they produced their currency, put the head of Charlemagne on their coins, and the dates that they give on that coin are 800 to 814 AD. Because, of course, the whole purpose of the European Union was to rebuild the Holy Roman Empire to develop the Fourth Reich. And, of course, it's that Fourth Reich that Christ and the saints will destroy towards the end of the 40 years of divine judgments that will flow from Armageddon. So Charlemagne's empire is very important in the scheme of things. Now, in Revelation 13, we're going to find that this beast of the earth looks like a lamb because it's religious, but it has a mouth like a lion because it's vicious, all right? And it has two horns. It has a papal horn based in Rome, because that's where the Pope was, and it has an imperial horn based in Central Europe, because that's where Charlemagne and his successors were. So you've got these two horns on this beast of the earth. Charlemagne's empire, as I said, the aim of the European Union was to rebuild, to reform this Holy Roman Empire, the Fourth Reich. So, let's move on. I want you to come now with me to Revelation chapter 13. Now, I'm going to give you a very quick run-through of the beast of the sea, which preceded it in history. It'll have to be quick, but we'll then get to the latter portion of Revelation chapter 13, and we'll have a look at what the Apocalypse says about this beast of the earth, or the Holy Roman Empire. Now, the point of this exercise is to see that unless you understand the prophecies of Daniel, you have little hope of understanding the Apocalypse. Because the prophecies of Daniel, not just Daniel, but especially Daniel, are the foundation upon which the Apocalypse is built. And I'm often asked by young brethren who, like I did, had an interest in studying the book of Revelation. You know, and they're hardly wet from baptism, and they come and say, Brother Jim, I'd really like to do a study of the Apocalypse. I'm really interested in Revelation. I want to understand it. And I ask them a simple question. Have you made a study of the book of Daniel? And usually the answer is no. Well, my response is, well, I think you should go away and make a study of the book of Daniel, and then you've got a foundation upon which you can study the Revelation, and it will become a lot more intelligible to you if you do that. Now, that's a little bit of advice to our younger brethren here, so don't come and ask me whether or not you should study the book of Revelation straight away, because that's going to be the answer, okay? Go and do some work on the book of Daniel. So come to Revelation 13 in verse 1. And I stood upon the sand of the sea and saw a beast rise up out of the sea. So this is why it's called the beast of the sea. Okay, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? The sea here is the Mediterranean Sea. And of course, this Roman Empire based around in that area, in that Mediterranean area, had been divided among the barbarian nations and provided the foundation of what we see today, divided Europe. The word beast, of course, has the idea of the same as Daniel chapter 7. That's how God sees these empires. He sees them as wild animals. And this beast we're going to find has, as we read on into verse 1, 7 heads and 10 horns. Well, where's this drawn from? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? 7 heads, 10 horns. Now, the 10 horns are clearly from Daniel chapter 7 and verse 7. The 7 heads represents the 7 forms of government throughout the history of the Roman Empire. And they did have 7 different forms of government. Okay, so it's telling us a head, of course, is what you think with, and this is what you govern with, as it were. So it's a way of saying this is a form of government. And on those 7 heads, there are 10 horns. They're also crowned, these horns, as you read there. There are 10 crowns, and upon the heads the name of blasphemy. Now, crowns, of course, indicates that they have self-government. They are independent. So it's telling us that these horns on this beast indicates that the empire had been divided at the time of the fulfilment of the prophecy. Then you come to verse 2. Now, this is where you see the connections with Daniel. We read in verse 2, and the beast which I saw was like unto a leopard, and his feet were as the feet of a bear, and his mouth as the mouth of a lion, and the dragon gave him his power and his seat and great authority. You actually have all the 4 beasts of Daniel chapter 7, verses 1 to 7 referred to here. Because you see, in Daniel chapter 7, you read of the Babylonian Empire being represented by a lion, the Medo-Persian by a bear, the Grecian by a leopard, and of course the 4th, an indescribable dragon-like creature. They're all here. So unless you understand Daniel chapter 7 as the roots of this prophecy, you're not likely to make too much sense of it. Now, dragon, of course, represents the military power of the Roman Empire, which was based in the east, in Constantinople. This word power, it means he's given the ability to perform, and so it was the Eastern emperors who supported the papacy in the west. Constantine had shifted the capital of the Roman Empire from Rome to Constantinople in AD 324, and that was the centre of the Roman Empire. That's where the military power lay. And so, of course, the Pope in the west, in Rome, had to depend upon them for support, and they gave him his seat and his power. And when you read on, you're going to see, of course, that it was an enormous power that was given to him. So let's just review this. Here is Daniel chapter 2 in the image. And we know that Daniel chapter 7 is an amplification of each part of that image in the form of beasts. This is the way God sees these empires. And then we've got the beast of the sea symbol, which is based upon these four beasts of Daniel chapter 7. It possessed, of course, all the characteristics of those four beasts. We read in verse 2, he's given great authority. That is, this is delegated authority. So here you've got the Eastern emperors giving the Pope in the West enormous political clout. And of course, we read about those seven heads or seven forms of Roman government. And we're told in verse 3 that one of those heads is severely injured. It says in verse 3, and I saw one of his heads, as it were, wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. Now, as I said, Rome had these seven forms of government. There was the regal, the consular, the dictatorial, the decemviral, the tribunitial, the imperial, and the Gothic. Now, the sixth head was the imperial. And that's what was overthrown by the barbarian invasions. And finally, in 476 AD, the imperial form, which had been in existence from BC 31, this is what Christ had to encounter, BC 31 to AD 476, that head was sorely wounded by barbarian invasion, and there was an eclipse of the Roman government. And it goes on to say, as it were, it had the appearance of death, but this head was to actually recover 60 years later. It was wounded to death. All right, the imperial power of the West came to an end in AD 476 through Odoacer, king of the Heruli. And in 493, Gothic rule was imposed on Italy by Theodoric, king of the Ostrogoths, or Eastern Goths. Thus, the seventh head of government was formed. So the sixth is severely wounded. The imperial passes out of the scene for a while. The Gothic form comes along. Now, Gothic rule, which was based on Roman forms and jurisprudence, was supported by the emperor in Constantinople and continued for 60 years. But its lifespan was to be cut short. You see, we read in verse 3 that his deadly wound, that is the wound given to this imperial form, the sixth head, was healed. And all the world wondered after the beast. So he had been slain, as it were, by a stroke and was replaced by the Gothic. And the Goths were brought over to Roman religion. They disagreed, however, on one ground with the Catholics. They weren't supporters of the Trinity, all right? They didn't like the Trinity. And so in the end, the Pope got his way, because in the healing, the Bishop of Rome induced Justinian, who was at the time the emperor in Constantinople, to invade Italy in 535, and by 544, Gothic rule had ended in Italy. And Constantinople revived the imperial head, ruling not from Rome, but from Ravenna. And Rome was relegated to a city of the second rank. But the situation released the Pope, of course, from subjection to a sovereign temporal power. And this allowed him, ultimately, to gain the power that he wanted. The sixth head, the imperial head, was revived, but now in a religious form. And all the world wondered. This word world is rendered by the RV as the earth. And of course, the earth is a reference to Europe, the Roman Empire in Europe. All the world wondered after this beast. He was given this power, this delegated authority, we read in verse 5. So come down to verse 5. There was given him a mouth speaking great things. Where have you heard that before? Well, this is the papal mouth, isn't it? And blasphemies, and power was given unto him to continue 42 months. And he opened his mouth in blasphemy against God, to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and them that dwell in heaven. And it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and all nations. What's the sense that you get? Well, the sense you get is he's going to come to complete domination, isn't he, in the West. He's got political power in the West. Now, 42 months is very interesting, because 42 months is 1,260 days, and on the day for a year principle, it's 1,260 years. And that 1,260 years, dated from the decree of Justinian in support of the papacy, Between the years 529 and 533, when Justinian wrote what are called the Justinian Decretals, like decrees, concerning the Bishop of Rome, okay, you take the 1260 from 529 AD to 533, you come down to 1789 to 1793. And all of you will know that 1789 was the beginning of the French Revolution, which reached its height in the Reign of Terror, 1793. And by 1793, Catholic influence and Catholic possessions in France had been abolished. All right, that was the work of the French Revolution. So the power they gained under Justinian, 529 to 533, was eliminated exactly 1260 years later. And that principle flows through. So here we've got our 529 to 533. But then in 549 and 554, we have Justinian's, what he called a pragmatic sanction, giving the Pope control of municipal and provincial governments. And this brought us through, if you add 1260 to 549 to 554, it brings you through, of course, to 1809, when Napoleon removed that power from the hands of the papacy. He annexed the papal states, and the Pope no longer had control of those papal states. You can come down to another date in the reign of Phocas. Now, Phocas was a little grubby little emperor in the east. He was put there by God for a purpose. And the one thing that he did that goes down in history is that he wrote decrees as well between 608 to 610 to give the Pope what's called temporal power, that is, control over people and land. Well, add 1260 to 608 to 610, and you come to 1868 to 1870. In 1868, Garibaldi came up from Naples. He pushed the Pope out of Rome. The Pope had to flee somewhere else. And by 1870, he had completely lost what's called temporal power. He completely lost it. I mean, he responded immediately by calling the First Vatican Council and declaring himself to be infallible. Well, that was his response. So here we've got the way history unfolds. And of course, the importance of this to us is this simple fact, that if the Holy Roman Empire, which was the last acquisition of Catholic power in history, happened in 800 AD, add 1260, and you come to the year 2060. And if this happened in history, brothers and sisters, it's going to happen again. This is the guarantee that papal power in the earth will come to an end in 2060. And in our studies over the course of this weekend, we've been talking about a time period of 40 years from Armageddon to the total establishment of the kingdom. 40 years. Guess how long 2060 is away? 41 years. Okay? So it's telling us how close we are. I won't go into all the side details of that because there's a lot of other considerations that need to be taken into account. But it's just an indication of how close we are to the ultimate fulfilment of Bible prophecy. So when we come back to our chart, we're looking now at these two beasts that are circled there, the beast of the sea, that leopard-like creature with its seven heads and 10 crowned horns, okay? And we're going to move on. We're going to move on, of course, to the beast of the earth, and that brings us down to verses 11 to 18 of this chapter. Here is this lamb-like creature with a lion-like mouth and two horns, a papal horn and an imperial horn. It's, of course, a reference to Charlemagne's empire. Let's have a very quick look at this then in Revelation chapter 13. We've had a look at these maps. We've got a bit of a feel for that. Here's our two horns, the imperial and the papal. Okay, let's come to verse 11 of Revelation chapter 13. And I beheld another beast coming up out of the earth. And notice this, there's a difference, isn't there? Coming up out of the earth. The one in verse 1 came up out of the sea. So that's why it's called Beast of the Sea. This one's called the Beast of the Earth. Now, this is the Holy Roman Empire, the next stage of papal ascendancy in Europe. And, of course, the earth here is a reference to Europe, and particularly Central Europe. We read on in verse 11. And he had two horns like a lamb, and he spake as a dragon. So the two horns, as I said, the religious power of the Pope and the military power of the Emperor, like a lamb because it claimed to be Christian in character. It was called the Holy Roman Empire. We'd put the word holy, of course, in inverted commas. All right, Holy Roman Empire. And he spake as a dragon, the symbol of paganized military imperialism, because we know, of course, of the pagan nature of that system. And it says in verse 12, and he exerciseth all the power of the first beast before him, and causeth the earth and them that dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. So what's this about? Well, Brother Thomas translates that phrase before him as in his presence. The first beast, the one of verse 1, the beast of the sea, was not destroyed. What remained, of course, was the papacy and the Catholicised ten horns, the nations of southern Europe, which, of course, out of which was to arise the Holy Roman Empire, called on the screen there the HRE, for the sake of space. The earth and them that dwell therein. Now, the papal alliance with Charlemagne resulted in the whole of Europe submitting to papal political power. And, of course, that papal political power had been manifested in what we called the beast of the sea. So when you think of the beast of the sea, think of papal political power. When you think of the beast of the earth, think of the Holy Roman Empire, in which papal political power was given the support that it needed to dominate the world. All right, that's how it worked. So this is the next phase of papal power. He caused, the emperor caused the world to worship the first beast and to give, of course, political and religious allegiance to that papal organisation, so that all men had to conform and to be servants of the Catholic system. We read this in verse 14. He deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by the means of those miracles or signs which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth, that is the Roman earth, that they should make an image to the beast, which had the wound by a sword and did live. So he's going to make an image to the beast. Now this word image, of course, is icon. We all know about icons, all right? We know what it is. It's a physical image. This word, of course, has the idea here of making the Pope an icon, as it were. Combines the ideas of representation and manifestation and refers to the papacy. Now, there's a little picture down the bottom there. You see that? A little picture down the bottom. You've got that lamb-like creature. And then behind it, you see an image. You see that? You've got that leopard-like creature sitting behind it with the horns sticking up. Yeah, well, that's a representation of what happened. The Holy Roman Empire was the political force that gave to the Pope his political power and demanded that all the world bow down to this system. Okay? That's why that image is behind. So he's creating an image of the beast. And we read in verse 15 of that enormous power that he was given. And he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. That the image of the beast. Notice the repetition here of this phrase, the image of the beast. That's that shadow behind the white lamb-like creature. It represents papal political power. And that power was so enormous, as we see, and caused that as many as would not worship the beast, the image of the beast, should be killed. And, of course, they pursued anybody who disagreed with them on religious grounds. And moreover, in verse 16, he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. What hand do Catholics use when they do the sign of the cross? All right? Yeah. Yeah, we know what that's a representation of, isn't it? It's the way the Catholics go about their worship. And if you didn't do that, you're going to be in serious trouble. They're going to be after you. You're not going to be able to trade, all right? Life in that era, in what we call the Dark Ages, because light had been almost obliterated out of the earth, life in that era must have been absolutely awful. It only had one advantage, brothers and sisters. You know what that advantage was? Because if you were a Christadelphian, as it were, a truth holder in those days, then what that meant to you is that your life would be both miserable and would come to an early end. And you had to make a choice. Is it really the truth? Is this what I'm going to give my whole life to, and am I prepared to die for it? You had to make that choice. What about today? All right, today it's all mushy, isn't it? Nobody oppresses you. Nobody cares. Do your own thing. Don't worry. You know, she'll be right. That's the attitude of today. And that is, unfortunately, destroying us. Because you see, far too many people are saying, well, what's it all mean? We'd be far better off if we were persecuted. I'm not suggesting that we should go and try and make that happen. But what I'm saying is that we would be better off if we were persecuted, because we would have to make some serious choices in life. Now, that's why I often say to young people, the very best thing that could happen to you is that the US invaded Canada. All right? No, that's not going to happen. But the very best thing would be if the US invaded Canada. It used to happen in the old days, like 1812. Okay? Why? Because the government would call up both men and women, 18 years and above, to fight against their enemy. And you'd have to stand up in court and say, I'm not going to do that because I'm a Christadelphian, I'm a conscientious objector. And you'd have to do what I did in 1969. Go to court. So stand up for your faith. And then you've got to make choices, don't you? And that would be good for us as a community. But it's not going to happen. Because our trial is going to be, of course, much more of the same until Christ comes. And that's a tragedy in some ways. As many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. And papal decrees became law enforced by the sword under the emperors. Thus the papacy had unchallengeable temporal power. Now this chapter ends very interestingly, doesn't it? It says in verse 17 that no man might buy or sell save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. So we've got a number of his name, and of course we know what that is in verse 18. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666, or 666. And there's a lot of nonsense being written about this. If you look it up on the internet, a lot of nonsense that has been written over the years about this. But it's absolutely fascinating when you explore what this really means. In the New Testament, the words for wealth, euphoria and tradition, paradosis, are the only two nouns out of 2,000 which have a numerical value of 666. And what was this about? It was all about trading. It was about the control and the wealth of the system. And we know, of course, that's the motivation that was behind them. So here we have an indication straight away as to what this is about. It's about that system. The title, the Vicar of the Son of God, Latin, Vicarius Filii Dei, has a numerical value of 666. Latinos, meaning the Latin kingdom, has a numerical value of 666 in the Greek. In AD 666, the Pope declared Latin to be the religious tongue of the papacy. In Hebrew, Rome, Romith, has a numerical value of 666. And the Romans only used six numerals in their numbering system. And when you add those six numerals together, they add up to 666. It's pretty hard, isn't it, not to see where this is going. The original name of Rome was Saturnia, meaning the city of Saturn. This secret name was revealed only to initiates of the Chaldean mysteries. In Chaldee, it was spelt Stur, S-T-U-R. Numerical value, 666. At the height of pagan Rome's power, Nero Caesar ruled. His name, written in Hebrew, has a value of 666. St. Peter's Cathedral in Rome is said to be 666 feet long. God willing, in 2 or 3 weeks or so, I'm going to take Margaret to Rome. We're going to visit the Vatican, and I'll probably step it out foot after foot to see if that's true. No, I won't do that. But you get a bit of a feel, don't you? That this is clearly telling us that this is the Catholic system, and it's, of course, about to be destroyed. This chart we've been using over the course of the weekend, this is the pattern of Roman Catholic resistance to Christ for 40 years after Armageddon. They will suffer, of course, badly as a result of the destruction of Gog and its forces in the land. That's why you've got this red line. It takes a real dip. But Psalm 2 tells us that they will immediately reorganise themselves and begin to gather a confederacy of nations against Christ's rule. They will initiate, of course, their anti-Christ doctrine and say, well, we told you so. All right, here he is. This is the one we were talking about. Okay, here he is in Jerusalem claiming to be king. And so they will rebuild their power. And 10 years after Armageddon, Revelation 14, verse 8, indicates that Rome as a place, as a centre of Catholic government and power, will be destroyed. It will disappear into the abyss. But that won't stop them, because they will then revert to Central Europe and rebuild their power again. Now, what's happening here is that we're going to go through the same phases of history that we've been considering. There's going to be a revival of the beast of the sea, Catholic political power in the West. The Western European nations will become very dependent upon the papacy in the wake of the Great Depression that's coming. That is a revival of the beast of the sea. But then, of course, it's going to morph after the destruction of Rome, the centre of that power. It's going to morph into something else. It's going to come back to the beast of the earth. And we read in Revelation 17, verse 12, that these 10 horns, or 10 nations of southern Europe, receive power for 30 years, 1 hour, with the beast. That power will be snuffed out 30 years after Armageddon, because that will be the destruction of the papacy and the empire that supports it. That's going to happen in 2060, we believe. And so we have the revival of the Holy Roman Empire. So the European Union, which was designed to rebuild the Holy Roman Empire, is not going to succeed until after Armageddon and after the destruction of Rome as the centre of papal power. That's going to happen when they revert to Central Europe and continue to oppose the reign of our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, this is, of course, the subject of Revelation chapter 17. So come quickly with me. I've done a little better in terms of time than I thought I would. Maybe that's because I've been going too fast. But we've got a couple of minutes to have a look at Revelation chapter 17. In verse 1, you read, And there came one of the seven angels, and this is the angel of the seventh vial of the previous chapter, all right? This is Christ and his saints, which had the seven vials and talked with me, saying unto me, come hither. Now, this is actually a call. This is a call that goes out to you and me, brothers and sisters, because you see, John is presented in the Apocalypse as a representative of all the faithful. Okay, so when this call is made to John, it's actually been made to you and me. Come hither is the Greek word duro. It means come along. Right? So there's this appeal. Come along. Right? You can be involved in this. You can be involved in the destruction of this system, which has blinded the minds of so many people over the millennia. So John is to be personally involved in the work of judgment, and we can be beside him. And we see, of course, in this verse, we see this picture of a whore that sits upon many waters. And we know from verse 15 of this chapter that these many waters represent peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. And the imagery that we see is this here. We've got a woman sitting upon a scarlet-coloured beast. She's described for us in verse 3. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman, that's an ecclesiastical system, sit upon a scarlet-coloured beast, full of the names of blasphemy. We've read that before somewhere, haven't we? That's in chapter 13 of the beast of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns. So where have we seen that before? See? This is the beast of the sea revived. Now, this is the power that Christ has to war with. That we're told that in verse 14. These shall make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them. So this is the power that Christ and the saints have to deal with. It's that revival of papal political power in Western Europe. Okay, got a picture? You've got this beast with the seven heads, the seven forms of Roman government. You've got the ten horns. You'll notice that these ten horns, though, are not crowned here, okay? Which means that though they're independent, they're not independent enough from the papacy's rule. Now, we know that the interpretation is given to us in this chapter, so we don't have to argue about it. Identifying the woman is pretty easy in the seven heads of the beast in verse 3. Verse 9 tells us the seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman sitteth. Rome was built, of course, on seven hills. There are seven kings. Rome had seven forms of government. And in verse 18, the woman which thou sawest is the great city which reigneth over the kings of the earth. And when this was written, of course, in circa AD 96 by John on the Isle of Patmos, there was only one city that ruled over the earth. And that was Rome. Okay, so there's no doubt about the interpretation. And by the way, that word reigneth in the Greek is in the present tense. Literally, it should read, which has kingship. That is, at the time when John wrote, Rome was the city that was dominating that region of the earth. So here's our picture of the Roman Empire as it was in ancient times with this woman sitting over that region. Here's the imagery, of course, of this is Vespasian's coin, and you've got Roma or Rome sitting on seven, well, it looks like stones to me, but that's the representation of the mountains or the hills, the seven hills of Rome. You've got the seven forms of government, regal down to tribunitial. Then you've got the imperial, which was the form that was wounded with a deadly wound but revived. Then you have the Gothic form. And, of course, the imperial is the eighth head mentioned in this chapter, because the imperial is revived after the Gothic had been removed. So here is our picture of the system that Christ and the saints have to deal with in the latter days. It's the latter-day manifestation of the beast of the sea, a revival of papal political power following the devastation of the French Revolution and the Napoleonic Wars. That's why you've got verse 16 in here, you see, because the papal system, in accordance with prophecy, had to go through an awful time, the beginning of divine judgments, from the time of the French Revolution, and Napoleon shortly thereafter overthrew the papal system and he banished the Pope. So what we've got here is a fulfillment of Bible prophecy which caused great heartache and pain for that system. How are they going to recover from that? Look at verse 16. And the ten horns which thou sawest upon the beast, these shall hate the whore, read French Revolution and beyond, and shall make her desolate, read French Revolution, and naked, and shall eat her flesh, that is, consume her, as it were, take up all her property, and burn her with fire. So they will bring judgment upon that system. Now that happened. It happened between 1789 and the early 1800s. How are they going to recover? Well, it's taken a long time. This is why the sixth vial, brothers and sisters, has been so long. The first vials of the wrath of God were relatively short periods. All right? Five vials, they went in 30 years. Gone. 30 years, five vials. The sixth vial began in 1820, and we're still here. We're nearly in 2020. 200 years later. Hang on, how does this work? All right, because you see, the papal system had to recover from the events of the French Revolution. That's why. And what's happening? Well, we're told what's going to happen in verse 17. For God hath put it in their hearts, the hearts of these southern European nations, the ten horn nations. He's put it in their hearts to fulfill his will and to agree and to give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of God shall be fulfilled. So what we're watching is, and it's been going on for some time now, Mussolini, of course, gave the Vatican 100-acre territory to the Pope in 1929, so he regained his temporal power over a little piece of land. Okay, so progressively the Pope is coming back into what he once was. And when this depression comes, and it's not too far away, the southern European nations that are already bankrupt are going to actually find themselves under papal control that they have not known for two centuries. They will be dependent upon that system. When you get poverty, people go back to religion, big time. They did it in Russia, they're going to do it in Europe. And he's going to regain enormous political power. So brothers and sisters and young people, we're on the verge of great things. We are going to be involved, hopefully, in the destruction of this system, that men's minds might be opened up to the truth, the great blessing that's been given to us, and we're going to have the great privilege of going out and preaching the truth to people who hitherto have not been prepared to listen, but they will be prepared to listen in the days to come. It's our Abrahamic hope. Look at verse 14 of Revelation 17. These shall make war with the Lamb. These are the ten horns. They'll make war with the Lamb. And the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is the Lord of lords and King of kings. And they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. Did you notice those three characteristics? They are called and chosen. Abraham was called out of Ur of the Chaldees in order that God might begin the process of overthrowing the apostasy of Nimrod. Nehemiah 9 verse 7, Abraham was chosen by God. In Romans 4:13, Abraham becomes the heir of the world through the belief of the promises that God had made to him. And we've gone through the same process, haven't we? We've been called out of the world. We've been chosen by God. And we can become the heirs of the world with our Lord Jesus Christ. And the work of the seventh vial angel will then be complete when the earth is filled with the glory of our God. So those who were with us at the School of the Prophets, here's your challenge. Try and make some sense out of that chart so that when I come back again, you can explain it to me.